They can't, baby doll. They can't.
Oh, no, they can't. Welcome to the Interracial Drawn Podcast. I'm your host, at Leslie Mack.
And I'm a very white guy.
And you are very white indeed. And
thank you very much.
I'm finally home, man.
Oh, fuck. Too long. Don't do that. Don't do that.
It was too long. Well, it was 2 weeks. So it was a long time to be away and, like, just, I hate being away.
And it was 2 weeks of, time where you could use spousal support, right? Like, it was a lot of work and you're stressed,
right,
and so much is going on, you know.
Oh, my gosh,
it's been a good time for me to be around. Like, oh, let me rub your feet, baby doll. I got you.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Can I get you something to drink? Yeah. What do you need? Like, that is, I couldn't do that.
True. The movement has kept us apart on several occasions this year. But anyways, welcome to the Interracial Drawn Podcast. If this is your first time joining us, you can
thank
find
you.
Us.
If it is, thank you.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial Drawn. That's J-A-W-N. Or you can find us on our website, interracialdrawn.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, at Interracial Drawn. Again, that's J-A-W-N. And we love feedback. We're going to actually have some feedback later in the episode. I'm really excited about
it. Yeah, I don't have like an applause. Like,
you need that.
And I honest to goodness, I'm just going to say there was three voicemails. And it's been, we've had the voicemail in like what? Like since episode 50. Eight episodes. Like 2 months. We had the since Carl was around, we got the voicemail. So I don't want to say I've been begging, but like we kind of did. Like a couple episodes, it was begging. It was like, come on, fucking, just please call my voicemail, please. Can't you call my voicemail? And in my mind, I was like, you know what? If we don't get any voicemails, I'm just done. I'm not gonna even promote it. I'm just like, yeah, it's a voicemail, whatever. Like I'm done begging. I was really like, I'm just gonna stop.
Well, anyways,
and
we got three. So you
can, does that mean begging works?
I think that matters. You can leave us feedback in a multitude of ways, many of which will have you interacting with us here on the show. One is you can leave us a 5-star review on either iTunes or Stitcher, and we will read your review aloud. Shout out to Rod and Karen from the Black Guy Who Tips for that rule.
Hi, Father.
You can also email us, interracialdrawn, again, J-A-W-N, at gmail.com. We'll be happy to read that on the air as well, as long as it's not fucking crazy. I mean, I'm not reading crazy shit.
Yeah.
And then the third way you can leave us is a voicemail, which Drew mentioned earlier, and you can call 657-JAWNERS. That's 657-JAWNERS. And if it's under 3 minutes, we'll play it on the air.
And dozens of people will hear it.
Dozens.
Dozens.
You won't even be able
dozens.
To. You'll be not Twitter famous. Anyways, as we were talking about earlier, I have been in Cleveland for the past 2 weeks preparing and then actually executing with an amazing team of other people, the Movement for Black Lives convening in Cleveland that took place from the 24th to the 26th. And it was amazing. And, you know, I don't know what else to say except for that. I was just really personally proud to be a part of it, and
as you should have been. It was
it just was really amazing. It was just
I said to was
I mom, cried like 6 times over the weekend.
I think we were talking to mom and I said, you know, I in viewing, reading, you know, following the hashtag and even trying to be, and I'll just clarify for people because I didn't do it on Twitter, and I'm going to write, I think, a little bit, but I don't know. I don't feel I don't really want to write anything about it because it wasn't about me or white people at all or even my observation. But for people that are listening, I was there, but I did not attend. And I was there at a request from organizers made of Surge showing up for racial justice to be there in case white people got out of pocket. So, some people might be confused, like, oh, I thought this was an affinity space. What's a very white guy doing there? Semi-official capacity. So, but I would say, you know, I think I haven't myself coalesced everything, Leslie, but almost immediately, and I think I tweeted like Friday afternoon about this, that, you know, just one look, all you got to do, one look at that M4BL hashtag. And as a white person, you can just instantly assess, like, okay, got it. Affinity spaces are crucial, critical for healing and safety and comfort and support. And just the number of people that I heard and saw and witnessed and spoke about the power in having this, you know, although not a perfect affinity space, but affinity space that, you know, had some and we'll talk about in a minute, but just the importance and the value of it. And people I just heard talking about never having been to something like that, about how much they needed it, how important it was, and just for healing and safety. It was incredible.
Yeah. And just, yeah, the safe part, I think, was a really big thing, because I feel like people sort of, like, I didn't know how the space was going to be. I hadn't been in this deliberate and large a space right. with just other Black people. So for me, I was like, you know, I had hopes, I had dreams of what it would feel like, but they did not even like come close to really like describing it when you're sitting in the auditorium at Cleveland State University. And it's 850 capacity is full. People have to go to an overflow room
right.
to watch the opening ceremony. And, you know, when we as a planning team had visited Cleveland a few weeks ago, which I talked about on the show, we of course went to all the places on the campus we'd be using and so on and so forth. And I remember us walking into that room and walking on the stage and just being like, can you imagine this whole place just filled with nothing but Black people?
And you did that in Morrison. You had
and,
overflow.
Yeah. And so to like, for me, that was like a really like, I don't know, like, you know, goosebumps type of moment.
I bet. Because
as organizers, you know, we had really like had this idea and this vision. And I mean, who knew if people were going to show up, how many people right. were going to show up. And so it was really cool just to see that happen and just to be a part of it and all that. And it's just really cool.
I said to you again, I think I'd like to kind of like coalesce my thoughts a little bit more, like give it some more time to kind of feel it out. But I said to you, Leslie, that I watched on live stream. It wasn't anything inappropriate. It was tweeted from the movement account, the opening plenary session, right? The sort of opening day, like big sort of keynote.
Yeah.
And there was it 30 different family members from Black people that had been killed by the state or vigilantes, and they each sort of had a moment and said something about, you know, their loved ones and why they're here fighting for justice. And it was just without a doubt one of the most powerful and moving things I've ever seen. And at the same time, it felt like I was intruding, like it was voyeuristic on some level. And in particular, the trans woman, was her name Marsha? I'm terrible. I can't remember her name.
Who were you talking about?
The woman that made the comment about, you know, these motherfuckers.
Oh, like, Miss Marjorie.
Miss Marjorie.
Yeah.
You know, so there was, and her speech, right? So there was moments that were, and I said this, I said, it felt like I was kind of like voyeuristic. And you said, well, because nothing on that stage, nothing written, said, or discussed was meant for you. Mm-hmm. So it very well could and should have felt voyeuristic.
Yeah.
And, but I would say if you're so inclined, you know, find that.
I don't think it's available.
Oh, it's not available. It's live only.
It's just, you can watch it then.
Okay. We're good.
I don't know if that will change, but I don't think it's up now. So.
Well, so we were talking about, you know, what I was hopefully supposed to be there to intercede with white folks, and didn't really work out. There was certainly more than a few white people that, like, ally failed in a couple different ways. I guess the first one I remember, and I gave her the, you know,
so just so people understand, okay. Like, so what Serge was doing was they had people there to just talk to white people and offer them some information about a training, a white ally training that was going on nearby that they were organizing. So
correct.
Just to be clear, like when you said you handed her something, that's what you were talking to her
yes,
about.
Yes.
Hey, you know, a bunch of us white folks are meeting in this place.
This
and
is
we're
going
gonna be
on.
Talking about this and blah, 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 blah.
Exactly.
Blah,
you know,
kind of thing.
In the hopes that somebody would self select, like, oh.
And, like, get the
yeah.
help. Yeah. Like,
hey,
oh,
I'm only one of about, you know, there's 1,200. There's all these people here and I'm only one white person. Maybe right. I should, oh, and someone, there's something going on for white people. Maybe I should do that. So the thing I saw a lot, the most common white individual that was there was a member of an interracial partnership.
Mm.
You know, not always male, female. There was a, you know, a gay interracial couple as well. But so the one couple I saw, oh my God, I was like, I can't believe, you know, this woman's just so clearly not equipped to be here in any, she needs to go to the surge training. Like, that was my thinking. And you said that in the session that they got called out a little bit.
No, I don't know if they got called out. I just know that, you know, somebody sent them into him. And I knew it was going to happen, actually, when I saw them register and come through and I knew that you had already spoke, you know, given them the information. I thought, oh, the fact that she's still here, like, I just feel like no one would say anything to her, but I think they would say something to him because, you know, we are trying to create the space and,
well, that wasn't even the worst of the ally fails.
So, yeah, I mean, it is what it is, but whatever.
There was one, a white woman who came in and discovered that there was this surge training and self-selected to go to the surge training, but felt the need to demand her $6 back for parking. Mm. And then even tried to make some sort of like, oh, I don't want the convening to pay for it. They should pay for it. Like, the convening's like rented the space. Like, I don't know who the bill's going to go to. But the worst part was that I think this person went to the training one day and then decided to come back the next day. Well, like, still didn't get the memo.
Yeah.
And then there was a white dude that came in with a whole stack of like notes. Like, these are my notes.
It wasn't notes. It was like flyers. Like, they had printed up like information about the, you know, work that
No, I'm sorry. The white woman, they were like, back to the white woman. She did come back the next day, and she almost was it like requested or demanded to meet with Alicia Garza. Like,
no, she just said that's why she was there.
But really wanted to speak with her, that her speech had moved her.
No,
and she,
Opal's speech had moved her.
As if, you know, she's got nothing better to do than...
Yeah, it was weird.
And I just... And she went to the thing, and it's like, I don't get it. I don't get it.
I mean, I don't know.
And bring in notes? Like, I'm going to come to this...
The notes, it wasn't just... I mean, notes gives the idea that it was like, you know, like piece of paper. This was like Xerox, like takeaway, like meant to be handed out to multiple people type of shit. It was like, what in the world?
Probably like bizarre and shit, like all mimeographed. I'm gonna solve racism. Here's my notes for you. Here's my mimeographed special for you black people.
I was telling somebody else on the team about this, and they were like, wait a second, start over. Like, they couldn't believe what I was saying.
They couldn't grasp it. Like, what do you mean?
I had it in my hand. I was like, yeah, so, you know.
You know, I keep
dropped off today.
I keep using the word notes, and I'm thinking of in the Big Lebowski when the landlord is going to do. I'm doing my dance quintet. I'd really appreciate it if you'd come and give me notes.
Give me some notes.
This guy's got his notes.
Yeah.
Oh, the fucking dude selling the newspapers?
Yeah, I didn't even see that.
That was the weirdest optic. So he's like basically crashed the convening, and he's on like public property outside the center.
Outside the venue. Right.
Outside the venue. And he set up like a folding table, and he's like big, like you know, overweight, like older white dude. And he's selling like one of these newspapers that's like the Radical fucking Times or something. I don't know. And it's barely like six pages. And like I read one, and it was shit that was like very like, you know, inflammatory shit, but like from like a long time ago, like the big headline story was Sandra Bland. You know what I'm saying? Like, not that that's not current, but it was like, you know, they were behind in their printing. Anyway, he's out there selling this stuff, and it just looked really strange. Like white dudes at the Black Movement for Black Lives convening selling like his newspaper. It was kind of weird. But so then later, I saw him sitting inside, and I overheard him talking, and it was like, I don't want to say it was hilarious, but it was like, they don't know what they're doing. You know, they're never going to get anything done unless they do this. You know, we should have been on the program. Like, it was really kind of strange. And then saddest still is he was like, yeah, we did pretty good. We sold 75 subscriptions. I was like, damn, 75? Ugh, hope it's not like a credit card scam or something.
It sounds like a credit card scam. Yeah. Those guys are so weird.
It's weird. So my other kind of takeaway, and you know, I've been tough on white anti-racist movements and strategizing, and you know, I've specifically called out people like Chris and Serge, and I'm a little like, I've seen kind of, I said to somebody, I see how the sausage is made, so I'm going to bitch a little bit less about how it tastes, because it's not easy, kind of some of the shit they have to do, but not, and that's not making excuses. But the thing that got me was that, and you said this the other day, Leslie, like on our last podcast, we talked about you not like not trusting, but like
my side eye,
your side eye, your strong side eye for white anti-racists that don't have literal skin in the game, right? Like kids, husbands, wives, whatever it is. Yeah. Like,
and you can tell like Chris has skin in the game, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Anyway, you know. So the lack of that makes it feel like there's no real fire in the belly, if that makes any sense.
Right.
And it's
still like an intellectual exercise. When something's an intellectual exercise, like it's just different when something's an emotional connection for you. And like, my thing is that as black people, like, you being white or somebody being white doesn't eliminate my ability to feel for them. And it just is such a evidence of supremacy and how racist this country is that white people grow up and are raised to de-empathize for black people. So if they don't have a personal connection, it's like they're not human. Okay. So therefore, I can't equate them with my experience. So it's just a weird kind of like thing. It happens in patriarchy as well. I think today a video came out, BuzzFeed put a video out about boyfriends watching their girlfriends being catcalled. So they had video of these girls walking and being catcalled in New York City, and then filmed their boyfriends watching it. So it was like a little
picture in a picture.
And, you know, some of them started off like, just being like derogatory about the people doing it. And then you could see them getting like more agitated and then like angry toward, you know, at the end, as it went on and on and on.
Interesting.
And it just made me think of, I wondered in my head, I was like, yeah, but if it takes somebody being like the person that you are supposed to protect personally,
to think of all women,
think of the fact that street harassment is a huge problem, like that is
a problem. That's a problem.
Like, for real, that's the fucking problem. And so that's how I feel about this whole thing with white anti-racist, because I'm like, you know, the fact that it takes so much to get you to have that fire.
Well, and
if that would be like saying that black people didn't feel for Sandy Hook, and that's bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't our children.
Well, there's actual studies. There's literal actual studies that show that white people have a difficulty empathizing with black individuals. Like, the darker the skin in videos and images, that you can literally, like, they're setting up EKGs to the brain and tracking, like, you know, sophisticated shit to determine empathy within the brain. And white people have a documented, you know, lack of empathy when it comes to black individuals. And that's direct corollary to, you know, a supremacist society and anti-black racism. You know, we're indoctrinated, we've got biases. Of course, it doesn't say of course, but it you know, given 40 some odd years of this indoctrination, it wouldn't come as a surprise that you know, a large majority of white people have this inability to empathize, you know.
Yeah, for sure. So,
and it is that this lack in the fire in the belly, I think that, you know, I keep thinking of like things like Black Brunch and the Blackout Collective.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, how, just where are, and I know there are more radical white people. And I, part of why I'm hesitant to even now like get into it like that is because I'm not shit. I'm an armchair quarterback. I'm a side seat driver, whatever you call it. Like, I'm not doing anything. I can't really like be pissing and moaning about what Surge is or isn't doing, or Chris Cash isn't doing.
And I hope people know that I talk to you about that fact all the time. Like,
what, that I'm not doing shit?
Yeah.
Sure. Like,
it's a common topic of conversation.
I don't think you're, I mean, and I'm not trying to like,
I don't say it because of, I'm trying to, you know, shame you or whatever, because you're bringing it up yourself, but I do feel like, you know, my side eye goes to everybody. Like,
yeah, no, sure. I'm not trying to make like excuses, but you know, we've done a lot for the movement. I'm comfortable with the work I have done.
It's, you know, the truth.
Is it, could it be more? Absolutely. Could it be better and more direct action? Sure. Do I spend more time on Twitter than is necessary? Absolutely. But, you know, I've still moved our family across the country so you can do this work full time.
Absolutely.
I've still made tremendous sacrifices, more so than the average white person. So I'm very comfortable. I don't mind. And I don't take it personally. When you're like, oh, you know, you white people, and you specifically, Drew, could do more. Like, you know, okay, you're right. I'm not going to, like, sit here and, like, cry my milk about it. Like, that's not going to do anything. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, even, like, if I were to have some sort of, like, emotional in my feels reaction to it, it's be like, well, whatever time I spend on my feels and emotional reaction is a complete waste of energy, space, time, and everything. Like, it seems like a totally illogical response to that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And like, and I know enough to be like, well, you're not going to like, you're not sitting here like, you know what, Drew, this is divorce time because you're not fucking ending supremacy fast enough. God damn it. Let's
get
go
on it, bitch.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, no, you ain't coming in this bed. Sleep on the couch, motherfucker. You didn't do anything for black lives today.
So
God damn it.
Racism is over, motherfucker.
You know, like, and
get it done.
If you did go there, maybe it'd be a different conversation, but you don't.
We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, so it's actually a good segue to this sort of like, you know, having a personal relationship and how things are different. And I really like to use I statements, and I do so because I'm not perfect, and, you know, I think it's just, it's easier. I don't have to fucking worry about this, that thing. I'll just talk about me. So with the training that Serge put on, and I, again, full disclosure, I was involved, and there was some, you know, what was I going to do? It was my role. And I, you know, and I haven't said this to you, Leslie, but I backed out. I said, you know what, I'm willing to do this. I'm not willing to do that. And it was good. It was really appropriate for me to do it. It felt bad at the time, like, oh, I'm, you know, failing, I can't do more. But I didn't think that I was going to be able to succeed in the way I wanted to and support you, Leslie. So I was really wanting to support you and you, you know, personally and directly, you're my wife. And it was just becoming a little bit much. So I was like, listen, I can't do this stuff. So they brought in some additional individuals. And I won't say the person's name, but right away I can have an inkling, given the name, you know, it's like a last name, first name kind of deal, and speaking with the individual on the phone, that it might be someone, and I don't know their preferred gender pronoun at this time, but I thought, you know, maybe it's a trans individual, I'm thinking. So we meet, we're there, find out, yes, my preferred gender pronoun is he and him. And I misgendered this individual on at least two occasions I know of. And one, I might have said something like, oh, let me get you that, you know, let me get this for you ladies. Like, just really, like, just said it out, like, without even thinking, that just sort of, like, heteropatriarchal. And I corrected it. I was like, oh, sorry. You know, you too. Like, I corrected it in the moment. And then the other one, and I haven't even told you this, Leslie, we're going to leave after the weekend, and everyone's parting ways, and there was an older woman, and she goes to give me a hug and a kiss, and I go to give a hug and kiss to everybody. And I thought for a second, so you know what? I did that to him, and I don't know if that was, you know, an inappropriate and misgendering. So I was really kind of concerned about it. And I was more concerned because I have a personal relationship with this person now, right? I'm connected with this individual. So I'm really wanting to make sure that I do a better job. And I know that I've done this harm. Like, misgendering a person that's identified as trans is really harmful, right? Like, it's violent to them. It's not appropriate and fair. So I went, like I always do, to Twitter. I said, hey, I could use some advice. Is there someone that I can talk to? And someone that also identifies as a trans male DM'd me, and I had a long, you know, very involved conversation. And from that was like, okay, I have a better, you know, and this person, loved to him for talking to me, said, listen, misgendering happens. And me as a, and this isn't me speaking, this is the person I asked for advice. He said, if it happens, my preference is a correction in the moment. It's like, oh, so sorry. But I'm not upset about it because it's going to happen. But even if it's afterwards, an apology and an acknowledgement of it at least lets me know that you were thinking of it and you're aware. And that means a lot to me. And I thought, okay, based on that, I'm going to apologize to this person. And I did, just wrote like a quick. And my other concern was, and this is weird, I kind of like, and I talked with the person on DM about this, I didn't want to draw more attention to it, if that makes any sense.
If that was going
to
be worse.
Yeah.
Like,
and I don't know why I thought this, but like, and again, this isn't my struggle, so I don't know. And maybe if somebody listens and, you know, was going to talk about this, I'd be intrigued to find out. But if there's a period of time in a trans individual's, you know, changing of either their dress or you know, I don't want to say like transition, but they're just, you know, however they're, changing, I would hate to bring the attention that I misgendered someone and then that person to think, oh, I don't look masculine enough. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, my saying, like, oh, I misgendered you, like, oh, great. Now, you know, you're saying that because you think I don't look masculine enough. Like, that would be almost even more harmful, if that makes any sense. Mm. So it was really kind of, I struggled with it.
Well, it was something new for you.
It was definitely something new. Yeah. And I, you know, I'll say this, I've been, and it's hard, I don't quite know the words, but I would say with regards to trans rights and transphobia, I've been saying the right things and by and large doing the right things, but in a weird way, because it was like I knew that's what should be done and is right. And having this personal relationship and having a faux pas, right? Like, I learn more from these mistakes I make, and I'm a fucking cishet white male. I'm going to make mistakes all goddamn day. Like, that's just never going to not happen. But the what I took from it is now a different, I'm going to consider preferred gender pronouns and trans rights in an intimately different way because of two different friends that, you know, one I know in real life now and one online. And it's, so there's, that is that, you know, part of that's probably a distance in the emotional empathy I could have. Because I didn't have any other trans individuals I ever knew in my life, right? Like, there was two individuals at church, but I didn't know Judy that well. Like, we weren't, like, friends.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, I guess for me, I do have trans friends. I've had trans friends. So I haven't had that exact. I just have always been kind of, like, aware of that. So, yeah.
And like I said, it wasn't even it was like a small faux pas.
Right. I know, I'm not saying it was a big faux pas. I'm just thinking through what you were saying before. Yeah, about the personal relationship piece of it. I do think that, like, I think about the way that society reacts and continues to react to trans men and women. And I feel like there's been a big shift because I just think back to, like, when I was in high school and stuff like that. And it was definitely something that was, like, thought of as, I don't know if counterculture is the right word for it, but it was definitely looked down upon, let's just say that, as a societal discussion. And I see that that has transitioned, but I also see because of that long period of that reaction to someone being transgender, that it has bred a level of inability to empathize with transgendered people, because we've been conditioned to not care, or to think that it's something that's weird, or to think that it's something that's not appropriate, or to think that, you know, just that you're conditioned for that. And so, you know, I just have so much respect and love for trans people and trans people of color and black trans men and women. I don't even know, like, for real, I
you know, and
you know, they're just the most amazing, caring, people I've ever come across ever, and in the movement in particular. I just, for me, this weekend was really great to be around so many of the trans leaders around the nation coming together for the Black Lives, the Movement for Black Lives convening. And so that was one thing that I hadn't anticipated, because I didn't know exactly who was coming, and you know, you don't know, it's a lot of people,
right.
But it really made me proud to see so many of my trans brothers and sisters there, and being themselves and hopefully being as comfortable. I think there's more work we need to do, as a movement and, as a
sure.
community, and that was brought up, what should be, what could have been done better, and particularly of the organizing and, you know, the space that we were trying to create. And I really appreciated them being, you know, honest and present enough to put together those thoughts and present them to the entire convening, because it really was not just about the organization of the conference, but just also about how they should be made to feel in any spaces we're trying right. to create in the movement. And I just respect the hell out of them. And
I agree 100%.
I learned a lot, and I continue to be in awe of them.
I will absolutely be able to point to, you know, the weekend and meeting this individual and having this interaction and feeling the need to, you know, understand a little bit and, you know, what it meant that I misgendered this individual, you know, perhaps once vocally and once through my actions. And I'll just have a profound and different understanding. And, you know, that it made me think of, I remember when Ijoma talked about her disdain for the walk a mile in their shoes rhetoric.
Yep.
And, you know, it's like, there's no fucking way to walk a mile in a black person's shoes. There's no fucking way to walk a mile in a trans person's shoes. You're just not going to do it.
Nope.
You can't, you know, you can, and I've talked about this before, I call it privilege myopia, that you can, you know, be as compassionate as you want. You can try to empathize and sympathize, but you're never going to fully understand. And we should stop trying. And if you can't fully understand, then you should allow the individuals that are of that group, of that, you know, sub whatever group it is, your classification, whatever you call it, right? If you can't fully understand, then let those individuals tell you, right? Listen instead of trying to, you know what I'm saying? Like, you see it all over, like white people trying to tell black people how they feel about racism is this or that and what they should do. It's like, nope, just, you know, shut up and fucking listen. And with trans, and I even think phobia is the wrong word, because it's not really like phobic, like that makes it sound like a, like I'm afraid of spiders, like, you know what I'm saying? Like it's hate. And I think the more strides individuals like Caitlyn Jenner make, the more the other side ramps up their rhetoric and their hate.
It Absolutely. Seems
it's, you know what I mean? It was just, yeah. But anyway, that was me. Like I said, I have a newfound, I thought it was a good segue, because you're talking about white people not being able to empathize. And I don't know if that's related to me being white and having this experience, but I definitely have a different, a new, I will approach gender nonconforming and trans individuals and the, and preferred gender pronouns and misgendering with a much, much more diligent nature personally. And, you know, whether that makes a difference or not, we'll see. But let's jump into it, yeah?
Let's do it.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
Oh, Zoe.
No, that's not Zoe. It's
Charlize. You're
ZZ.
Right.
Anyway, so something interesting happened. I'm sure everyone heard while we were off the air kind of last week that some liberal activist from the Black Lives Matter movement took to the Netroots conference and, you know, did a civil disruption of a presidential candidate forum with Bernie Sanders and Mark O'Malley. Is that what it is? I think.
Yep.
Or Mike O'Malley. I don't know.
O'Malley.
O'Malley. Yeah, whoever. And.
Oh, not going to win.
Yeah. And so out of that came this announcement that the liberal activist group Democracy for America will change its candidate endorsement process in response to a Black Lives Matter protest. After a racial justice protest halted the meeting with Democratic presidential candidates on Saturday, the 1 million member network will now include candidates' proposals for addressing racism among the central criteria for DFA's endorsement, according to an advanced copy of the announcement. And so this applies to candidates from local elections all the way up to the presidential level. And additionally, in its questions of candidates in local races, DFA will ask how candidates will support the movement for Black lives and confront racism and our culture of white supremacy, according to the DFA announcement. Quote, we want the candidates we endorse to not only say that hashtag Black Lives Matter, we want these candidates to know that progressives, including those in organizations with largely white membership and staff like DFA, expect them to stand up to, name, and address systemic racism as fundamental and foundational to the movement to end income equality.
Hear fucking hear. That gets a huge ding, dude.
Yeah.
And that's Black Lives Matter that did that. That is the movement, the action. It's incredible. And I don't say it's part of like a bellwether, but you know, hey, it's a million progressive voices saying you need to have a fucking statement and a plan about this that is important to us voting people. That's big. That's really big.
Yes,
I hope it bleeds into, I hope it's the, you know, like California is sort of the leader when it comes to emissions and standards and other things. And then like, just because California is so rigid, the manufacturers are like, well, fuck it. We'll just make everything to the California standard. You know what I'm saying? Like a two-stroke engine for a backpack leaf blower has some regulations about how loud and how much oil it can do, this and that. And if you have to make one for California standards and there's 49 other states that have lower standards, you're not going to make two different machines. You're going to make one
right
that adheres to the California standard. And I'd love for DFA and things like this to be all of a sudden the sort of debate standard that, you know, on CBS and all these other places, they're
going
to
ask.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope so. So I happened to get my hot little hands on the actual letter that was sent to members of Democracy for America. It was forwarded to me. And the subject of it is hashtag Black Lives Matter versus hashtag All Lives Matter is what Charles Chamberlain sent out. He says that obviously they heard on Friday that Time Magazine, which is the article I was just reporting or reading from, talked about this new progress. And then it says this. At Nehru's Nation this year, a team of Black women affiliated with the Movement for Black Lives conducted an incredibly effective direct action during the presidential town hall with Governor Martin O'Malley and Senator Bernie Sanders. The organizers called on both candidates to directly acknowledge the Black women who have died in custody of the police, including Sandra Blant, who was found dead in a jail cell in Texas just days earlier. And they asked them to specifically lay out what they would do in office to disrupt and dismantle structural racism in our criminal justice system and beyond. Both candidates disappointed the hashtag Black Lives Matter organizers with their answers. They disappointed me as well. I want to be clear here. I have respect for all our presidential candidates and plan to fight hard alongside them and you to advance a progressive platform this year and in the years to come. That said, I want to explain why I believe their answers were inadequate and how important I think it is for us as a movement to start pushing ourselves and our candidates for office for better answers when it comes to racial justice.
Yes, ourselves. Love it.
And then he goes on to say that Governor O'Malley pushed back to acknowledge when he was pushed to say it, repeated Black Lives Matter, White Lives Matter, All Lives Matter a couple of times. He subsequently apologized, admitted that he did not understand the tremendous passion, commitment, and depth of feeling that all of us should be attaching to this issue. This dude is running for fucking president. He was like, oh, I didn't know All Lives Matter was
honestly
offensive.
And you're,
really, dude?
That to me, can I use his name?
Steve Jordan.
Steve Jordan. That's the Steve Jordan defense, right? And you may have heard it on our podcast before. Leslie had a boss. His name was Steve Jordan. He was a complete fucking idiot. And one day he got fucking drunk with a bunch of people on staff and then in his car, like, wrecked it, like, overnight, like, on the fucking, you know, in the middle of the parking lot. They had video cameras and everything. And the security guard that was on that night that got to watch the video was somebody that Steve Jordan had fired inappropriately previous before. Got it? So Steve gets called to the carpet. They come in and he's going to get fired and there's all kinds of shenanigans and bullshit going on. And for every fucking instance of, like, craziness, like, this person's stealing and this is this and this is this. Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Like, you're in charge of this facility and you didn't know that? That's not a good answer. It's like worse than taking the fifth. It's like pleading, like, I'm just stupid. Like, I'm either inept, incompetent, or just downright dumb.
Right.
And he went for dumb. So this to me is the Steve Jordan of defense. Like, oh, I was at a Netroots, like, progressive, like, with Elon James, a black, he's got a radio network, This Week in Blackness, like, all this shit. Like, you're telling me that you and your campaign didn't know that All Lives Matter and White Lives Matter as a retort to Black Lives Matter was, like, bludgeoning with a fucking club. Like, really? Really? That's your answer? Like, oh, we didn't know that? Then your campaign is shit.
Yeah, your campaign
fire the kid. Whoever booked this for you, get them out. Because they didn't fucking prep you at all. And I know there's a prep book. They have a whole team that's like, oh, let's get ready. We're going to answer this on economy.
But that just shows you how inconsequential these machines have made Black people and the importance of the movement. Let me continue reading the letter because it's really good. He says, no one, absolutely no one, questions the value of the lives of white people in our society. When white people are killed, the media pays attention. The criminal justice system takes action. The public demands answers. The same simply isn't true when it comes to Black lives. It hasn't been true historically, and it isn't true now. When Black people die at the hands of the police, for example, our society makes excuses for the officers. Character assassinates the victims or just looks the other way far, far too often.
Guy's on point.
Yeah, he is. He is. He says, even in a world where in which income inequality did not exist, structural systemic racism would still take Black and brown lives. When police officers profile and pull over Black people, it doesn't matter to those officers where those individuals went to college or how much money they make. It only matters that they are Black. That prejudice is real and pervasive, and we will never be able to really fix our economic problems without ending it and the long list of disadvantages that spring from it. That's why the big challenge facing our movement.
Nice.
And the candidate who seeks to lead us is in fighting oppressive power wherever it exists, from the Wall Street banks that are rigging our economy and destroying lives to a criminal justice system that is brutalizing Black and brown people. While Democracy for America and many other progressive organizations with largely white memberships haven't been silent in fighting against racial injustice, there's no doubt that we can do more. Real solidarity means not just speaking out against racial injustice, but doing everything we can to connect the fight against structural racism to every aspect of the work that we do.
Yes.
After hearing the calls of our friends in the Black Lives Matter movement, that's exactly what we intend to do. Here's what Democracy for America is committing to as an organization with a mission to elect more and better Democrats across the country. We will ask every single candidate who asks for our support what they have done and what they will do to stand alongside the movement for Black Lives while confronting structural racism within our country's culture of white supremacy. They will be working with campaigns to communicate with voters more often and more effectively about race by actively helping candidates poll on racial justice issues and amplify messaging that takes on structural racism.
Yo, they're going to start giving grades.
And yes, and they will. They do give grades. And that's going to be one. That's going to be now a new grade that they're going to get.
Love it. Love it.
GFA will work to change the kind of candidates that run for office and win. We need to elect leadership that reflects the full array of talent and lived experiences that America has to offer. That's why we intend to work even harder to recruit and support progressive people of color to run for office and win in 2016 and beyond. This is just the beginning of our process. Now we want to hear more about what you think, click here to tell us what the progressive movement should do proactively to address racial injustice. What do you think about Democracy for America's decision to integrate a racial justice lens into our candidate endorsement process and any new ideas you think we should consider? This won't be easy and it will take a long time, but working together, we can support the movement for Black lives, change the Democratic Party, push back on Republicans like Jeb Bush, win elections, and put an end to income inequality and racial injustice. Thanks for letting us know what you think.
You know what?
Good night, everybody.
Just right there. Boom. Fucking. You know what? And that is, you know, I say like fire in the belly. I don't think that's quite like fire in the belly, but that it's a white organization, yeah, and it's putting their money where their mouth is, and it's making an actual impact. Because I hate to say it, but like, you know, I've said it repeatedly, like supremacy is a white creation, a white problem. It's impacting black people, but it's going to take white people doing a lot of different things to change things in a lot of different ways. Not that black people can't, but like white people have position and power and agency that, you know, black people have been locked out of. And part of that's election. Part of that's political. And to have a group that's like, listen, we ain't fucking around. This is how you get our votes. And in fact, that's a good, we didn't have it in our notes, but shout out, I think Elon created Earn This Damn Vote or Lose as a hashtag. And, you know, I'm kind of with it, you know. And same with Rod and his fucking, you know, going on the Bernie Sanders.
The Sanders.
The Sanders. Bernie is so black. And, you know, I just... I'm here, and somebody even asked me. I said, you know, I'm Hillary's the presumptive, but I'm not a, you know, I don't think she's there with regards to Black Lives and some other things. And I said, Bernie seems, this is before he did Netroots, it seems interesting, but I don't think he's there either. And then he has his Netroots like tantrum, you know, which is just absurd. Again, same kind of deal. Like, you came and you didn't have a fucking plan. You went to Netroots, Elon James fucking moderating the thing. You had no fucking clue as to what you were going to answer on that shit. Not a fucking thing. And then when you get like confronted, you're like, I'm out.
You people don't want me here. Anyways, let's not talk about Bernie. I'm not going to talk about that. So next bit of news that I had is actually another interesting thing having to do with, the impact of the Movement for Black Lives and Black Lives Matter on normally white institutional setups. Okay.
Yep.
So we just talked about Democracy for America, which is actually, it's huge, and they actually get people elected. It's a lot of people that go along with them. So their endorsement is very important. It's a big block for Democrats and any progressive, actually. And so this one is interesting because it's out of California. United Auto Workers Local 2865, the union representing 13,000 teaching assistants and other student workers throughout the University of California, called on the AFL-CIO to end its affiliation with the International Union of Police Associations.
Nice! They called to end, to terminate the fucking FPO or whatever it is for term.
In a resolution passed by its governing body on July 25th, the resolution came in the wake of a letter written by the UAW's Black Interest Coordinating Committee, the group formed in December 2014 in response to the acquittal of police officers and the death of Mike Brown and Eric Garner, and is largely inspired by recent actions in the Black Lives Matter movement. With the letter, BICC aims to, quote, start a really difficult conversation that the labor movement has had in the past and needs to continue to have around the intersections of race and labor, economic privation, and racial disparity.
Wow. And that's another large, yep, you know, mostly, I wouldn't say predominantly, white, but, you know, yep, probably very white.
Yes.
How many is it? 13,000?
That's 13,000
academics. Wow. That's terrific.
The letter charges that police associations opt in ways that are antithetical to the mission statement of AFL-CIO, particularly its stated goal, quote, to fulfill the yearnings of the human spirit for liberty, justice, and community, to advance the individual and associational freedom, and to vanquish oppression, privation, and cruelty in all their forms.
That's their fucking mission statement?
That's in the AFL-CIO's mission statement.
Yeah, it is antithetical to the mission. And that's the issue I have with UUism.
It is, and I was going to talk about that next, so don't go there yet.
Oh, this is tremendous, though.
I know, it's cool.
I'm all jazzed.
You're amped right now. People out there, he's very amped up.
Maybe I should drink more of this beer. If you could see this beer,
You could see this beer. The AFL-CIO is an enormous part of the labor movement. It has a lot to say. It influences elections. It's an organization which serves to build a lot of solidarity between a number of different unions. But at the same time, one of the things that we notice is that it also has these police associations, which are a part of it, police associations who have constantly worked, not necessarily in the interest of workers, and particularly black workers, but instead have upheld a capitalist status quo as well as white supremacy. So anyways, they go through a whole bunch of stuff, but it's really interesting. And, you know,
again, that could just be the one group. Now that's another group follows that template and says, we're going to have the same demand.
We want that too. So speaking of UU, I met with a bunch of black UUs at the Movement for Black Lives. Shout out to all of you, Lena and Carlton and Isis and Aditi and Paula and all of you other wonderful people. And it was, when I tell you, amazing lunch. It was the only actual like conference-y thing I got to do. Right. But it was so great. I mean, we just talked about the experience was so similar. Like everybody had their, I don't want to talk about race guy. Everybody had their, like every single one of us had the same experience. And it was like, you know, I don't know. It was just great to have people. I said to Carlton, I said, I was so happy to be there because I was starting to feel like I was crazy. Like there was like a part of me that was like, was it me? Like it, what is it me? Cause it was so, it was just that, too much.
That church just had their banner fucking vandalized.
Yeah. So it was just amazing. And
so it's not you.
No. And like they all, the same thing where they feel like they're being trotted out all the time is the like, you know, see, we are inclusive, like some sort of like weird, like crazy.
Did anybody, like, I don't know if you feel this way.
And ISIS is young. She's like, you know, a teenager. She's in youth group still.
What? Like
YA? And she's like, yeah. And she's like, I sometimes go to youth group, but it's like work over.
Let me ask you this.
I can't.
I don't know if it's your specific complexion or your any other specific to you, but I felt like our congregation forgot you were black. Like, I swear to God.
Well, I think, and this is something that Carlton said, and actually, let me get my book out because...
Do you feel the same way? Really, do you think that's how our congregation acted? Like, oh, we forgot Leslie was black. Like,
well, I think that they had lulled themselves into thinking they knew what blackness was. And so I don't think they necessarily didn't realize I was black. They just didn't quite understand what that meant. And so it was like, oh, wait, that's what blackness is?
And then once you started proverbially flexing said blackness...
Right.
They were like, ooh. I got you.
Right. So Carlton made this comment that UUism, if you take away whiteness and Eurocentricity, those are the glue that holds UU together. And if you remove those two things, right. What would be left?
He's so right. Eurocentrism is bad in UUism.
Yeah.
It's a very white religion. Yeah. Just like I said this to someone.
Not just in its makeup, but the point he's trying to make is that it's like, oh, let's make a list of the typical UU and it's like watches NPR. Like drives up. We joke about it every time. It's like, oh, how many Priuses are going to be in the parking lot?
Listen.
And it's like 30 for real.
There's so many things and so many categorizations that UUism is white and central, centering whiteness. The typical person who goes to a UU church is a white collar, you know, middle to upper class, you know,
not
white
that
person.
Let me stop you there because you wouldn't actually know that because they do not count any personal census data.
I understand, but that's
no. But I'm making a point of that because it will lead me to a couple of things that we want to demand of the UUA. So
and so then the. If that's the typical individual, when they come to church, and I fit right into that fucking mold. When I go to church, I'm in fucking flip flops and shorts. Yep. I'm like, fuck that. I can go in a t-shirt. This is awesome. Like I've always wanted to go to church in a t-shirt and fucking jeans. Like that's the bomb to me. Like to go coffee, t-shirt and jeans. Boom. I love it. And like, I really enjoyed that. Now, in contrast, a lot of, black churches, AME, whatever you want to call it, the individual might be a more working class. They might wear blue collar stuff all week. So what do they do when they want to go to church? They want to dress up. They want to wear their Sunday best. What do you think somebody as a black individual comes to a UU church in their Sunday best and sees all these motherfuckers like me in their flip-flops and shorts? It's kind of like, well, what the hell? They don't feel welcomed. It's a little bit different. The entire hymnal has like not a single African proverb, not a single African hymnal. It's got like multiple and way too many instances of white, dark, black, bad, white, good.
So much.
You know, that's
talked about all of that.
Yeah, but it's like, I'm not saying that needs to change. It does, but he's this individual said that, like, you take away that, like, what are you left with? Like, to me, you're left with the principles, and to me, that is my faith is the seven principles, in particular, the first one. And I don't think that UUism has addressed it in properly. I've accused UUs in general of liking the first principle, the inherent all individuals have inherent dignity and worth. Period. Full stop. Right. Just that's it.
That's
you don't have to go any further than that. Stop.
Yeah.
And they like it in principle, and they repeat it. All individuals have inherent dignity and worth. Oh, okay, great. I believe that. Yeah, that's good. I'm a good person. But then you don't act it. You're not treating black people that way. And that's an issue for me. And I don't know how to reconcile that. And we have an eighth principle that's on the table maybe, but I don't know. What was your comment about census and demands of the UUA, which I'm thrilled, by the way?
So the few things that we talked about was making different congregations do direct action training. So they would be kind of like go through a training before they'd be able to do work as a congregation with a Black Lives Matter organization locally.
Okay.
The other one was
our church. Their first action, they called the police.
Yeah,
they called the police. Yeah. Like, we're going to do this thing.
But this is them. They wouldn't be doing a thing. So that's kind of because, like, by now there's no community that doesn't have some form of
Black
activity.
Lives Matter. Sure.
Yeah, it's just not going to be true. We also are asking for them to do identity-based data gathering, which would not just cover racial identity, but also gender and sexual preference and all of those kinds of things that go along with that. So just to get some data, because we had this discussion about how we feel like there's been a mass exodus of Black people from the churches.
Agreed.
But because they don't have data, like they don't even get, they don't have to acknowledge it. They can just claim, like, what are you talking about? It's nothing.
And I like the data in particular, because I feel like there's this weird argument whether you change the dynamic in the pew versus you change the dynamic in the hierarchy.
Right.
And you kind of have to do both, but I feel like you can do them at the same time and do it right. But a lot of people feel like you have to change the structure inside before you can invite quote-unquote Black people to join the community. Like if you invite Black folk to change the dynamic of the pew and you don't change the dynamic on the hierarchy and you do all the fucked up shit that's like anti-Black and pushes people away, you're going to invite Black people and push them away, which seems to happen. Like, the Black people I know that have gone to UU churches have kind of, I don't know how involved they are.
Yeah, so then they, and then the other one was that financial resources be diverted to Black Lives Matter, either through chapter support or at the national level. So a suggestion for something like doing one, recommending that congregations have one Sunday a month collection plate donated to their local Black Lives Matter chapter, and then having the UUA also donate funds directly to the national Black Lives Matter organization.
Nice,
so anyways,
nice.
That was really cool, but it's interesting because, you know, everyone's like, they're not going to do this or they're not going to do that. I said, yeah, but, you know, we have to come to the table. We have to come to the table if we want to be in this religion and if we want to continue. And I say the reason that keeps me in it is because I feel like if there's a group of people that I could point to that, that would be that should be the easiest lever to pull, it would
absolutely
be a liberal, you know, slightly hippie, maybe lesbian, you know, NPR listening, earthy, hippie, crunchy, like white chick. Like, to me, like, if I can't get them,
honestly, Leslie,
what hope do we have with these other assholes?
When I left our church, when it was officially done, when I went, and their big thing, and I don't even talked about it on the show, but their big thing is like, oh, you got to come listen to this. And I'm not going to call anybody out, but the individual spoke for a long period of time, and the summation was like, it's okay, white people. It's not your fault. It takes a long time. Don't worry about it. And I just was like, all the wind was out of my head. And I, you know, this individual's, you know, paid to go around and talk to white people. So I guess that's the message that white people want to hear. And that's how you keep getting taken around to talk to white people. But it just was like, I can't do it. I just can't. And what bummed me out the most was what you just said, Leslie, that I feel like me as a white person, like I've repeatedly stated, my only and sole purpose is to talk to other white people. I do not speak on for behalf at all towards people of color, period, not at all. As a, you know, white man to other white people, period, full stop. And, you know, I don't know what my purpose and goal is, but I'm at present emulated what others and elders in this movement tend to do, which is educate white people and try to move them further along in terms of their consciousness from, you know, one stage of white racial identity to another. And hopefully it's somewhere along that line it includes some action. And, you know, whether that's the best thing to do, that's what I'm currently doing. And that's why, like, it bummed me out so much. Like, when I decided, like, okay, I'm done with this church, I was like, fuck me, if I can't, like, I'm not saying this is my purpose and goal, but, like, if I can't motivate and move, like, progressive liberal white people that know me personally and have seen you leave the church and they are hurt. They are hurting. If I can't move them, like, fuck, the fuck I feel like a failure. It really kind of like bummed the shit out of me. So I'm with you. And I think on the other thing, you said at one point, and I don't know if you remember it, but it really galvanized me that, like, you know what? I'm not going to let them push me out of this religion. This is how I feel, and this is a religion I feel strongly about, and it's a democracy, and I can change the religion. I'm not going to let them push me out.
Yeah, it's just like feminism in me. I can't. I won't. I won't let people define me.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
I won't do it. I just refuse. I'm too old for that bullshit. That's a fact.
You're too old. So, listen, we queued it up early. So, I got a couple of voicemails, yeah, and I think it's time maybe to do Friends of the Jonks. It's been a little bit of a while. It's been a while. We have to start with the original. The original genre, Carl Marr. Thank you, Carl. We appreciate you, buddy.
And Miss KCP, thanks for giving us a shout out on Twitter, Miss KCP.
Mixed Baby Caleb. Love to you, dude. Mixed Baby Caleb.
Mm-hmm. Petty LaBelle, a.k.a. the underscore Nash Bell. Thanks for the shout out.
Petty LaBelle. So bottom line up front. Thank you, bottom line up front.
Cleo's Baby 64. I love, I actually talk with her on Twitter all the time. So thank you.
Yeah, I love, she does so much on Periscope. She's always getting my Periscopes. Thank you, baby. Burble 2. Interact with Burble 2 a lot on Twitter, too.
Shelly Sometimes. Thank you so much for being a friend of the John.
Nice. Musings of a Sheeb. Thank you. And Musings of a Sheeb has a podcast about Dogecoin.
Yes.
Which is a form of e-currency, like the, what's the other coin? Bitcoin. It's a different type of Bitcoin.
Yep. Absolutely. A DC Bumblebee. What's up?
One of the first reviews you ever got.
DC Bumblebee. Yep.
The Vic Chick. Thank you, Vic Chick.
Shout out to our brother and sister from another Mr. Up North. The Chonilla Podcast and Clovisaurus and Sherasaurus. We love those guys. We're going to see them like fucking two goddamn weeks.
Honestly, should we bring our mics? We should podcast. We're up there with them. We should do a show.
While we're driving, so we can totally bring the microphone to us. Let's do it.
Julie, otherwise known as the Unruly Rev.
Unruly.
In the house.
Sean and Stacey Jordan. Thanks, guys. We love you guys. They're so awesome.
They're awesome. My man, Forrest Bivens. You rock it, dude.
And Navy Dad 007. Oh, no, 007. Now, I think Navy Dad's the one that's been listening to all the Drawn episodes.
Straight through,
so,
man.
So, what? Shout out to you and good for the commitment because I wouldn't want to do it, but.
That's like, I don't call that like pain.
Too much of us.
That's too much.
I couldn't do it.
Honestly, I said when you and Carl, I think Carl and you are the only people that have listened to everyone. Maybe Navy Dad will be on that now because I haven't.
Navy Dad will be on episodes, you didn't listen to all.
I'd say of like, one episode 58, I bet you I've only listened to like. Of all the hours, because some I listen to a little bit here, a little bit there, of all the hours that are in the 58 episodes, I've listened to maybe like 25%, 30%, 40%.
Interesting.
I do the show.
I like to hear how we sound.
I get some feedback. I get some feedback.
Gets me, you know, right. So we got some voicemails too.
Yeah, we should. Let's go to it. Here we go.
Okay, I'll try this again. This is Rosia Shive. You guys asked the last show. For some voicemail, so here it is. Since you're located in the Midwest, I'm wondering how you guys felt about cheese curds. More importantly, how you felt about the phenomena of mayonnaise on everything. I know when I went to Wisconsin and I walked into McDonald's, and my double cheeseburger automatically came with mayonnaise, and I also had bacon, which was good. I wasn't surprised by that, but the mayonnaise thing, just as soon as I bit into it, I was like, I had to go back and said, you know, I didn't ask for mayonnaise. And then the person just looked at me like I was stupid. And I was like, it comes with mayonnaise. And I'm like, no. No, it doesn't. It doesn't come with mayonnaise. Could you please make me another one with no mayonnaise and extra bacon, please? Make up the fact that you put mayonnaise on my burger.
Oh, my gosh.
So I just wanted to, you know, ask you how y'all felt about that and what you think about cheese curds, which I know is something that a lot of Midwesters do.
Oh my God, too funny.
That's it. Hope you guys have a great show.
Okay, first of all, it's Musings of a Sheep on Twitter. And I thought so. I confirmed with her to make sure that I got the name right. So Musings of a Sheep, thank you for heeding the call.
Yes.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And second of all, honestly, I don't know if you could have fucking like T-balled or like cheese fucking curds. Are you kidding? Fuck! Like home run, like boom, cheese curds. Oh my fucking God. I fucking love cheese curds.
And I hate them.
I fucking love them, dude.
And I hate them.
Oh, my God.
They're like, so white.
Oh, they're so good,
oh,
dude.
My God. So gross.
Deep fried. Oh, shit. There's a food truck in Philadelphia that did nothing but cheese curds. And you could get them with, like, different fucking dipping sauces and shit. And I bet you the dipping sauces had mayo. It was just so good. I fucking eat the shit out of cheese curds. And yes, this very white guy does mayonnaise the shit out of everything. I can't lie about it.
Gross.
Mayo. I don't quite do the mayo on fries. Like, that's a little too much for me. Like,
that's
some of the
French.
It's Brits or French. Somebody does that.
Somebody.
But every sandwich, every fucking burger, I put mayo on a lot. I don't put mayo on a hot dog. That's a little much.
Yeah, man.
I used to eat a sandwich that was toast, lettuce, and mayo. And that was it.
The true witch.
The true witch. Well, thank
Nobody
you.
Nobody wants that.
I'm thrilled that someone that using the sheep sent in a
voicemail. Thank you for your voicemail. You too out there. If you leave a voicemail, we'll play and talk about it too. All right, play the next one. We have three.
Interracial John. My name is Angela Brown, and I was connected on Twitter with your husband. Very, very white guy.
Wait a minute. Very, very white guy.
Very is an extra very.
Easy now,
you gotta
Angela.
Make that your handle now. Not the at, but the other part. Very, very white guy.
Shut the fuck up.
Supported my movement, Justice for Angela Brown, because of some serious racial disparities on the airline. I have a very serious civil rights case that your husband helped to support. But I wanted to say your podcast is amazing. You're an awesome woman, and you guys are a great team.
Oh, it's my podcast.
Yeah, I was just going to pause.
Oh, I like you. Thanks, Angela.
Someone did that just the other day. Who was it? Someone on Twitter is like, oh, yeah, I just discovered your wife's podcast. It's awesome. I was like, ahem. I'd like to think of it as our podcast. And someone wrote back, the patriarchy.
Yes, I'm here.
And,
for
you
all
know,
that.
I gotta be honest. It's been I wouldn't call it a bone of contention.
It's a little bit.
We've discussed it.
Something stuck in your craw about it. I'll say that
we've discussed it. Especially last week when I was doing all the work, I was like, well, "Do I get to say the intro?" And you're like, "No, it's still my podcast.
It's still my podcast, bitch. You can't have that." What
let's go to Angel's message. Angel's message isn't done.
Oh, what did I name the episode though?
Drew runs the job.
Exactly. See.
Thank you, love.
Thanks for the work that you do and continue on. God bless.
Aww.
Thank you, Angela.
So tell me more about the case.
Yeah, so she, and you can look it up. I got to get this.
Angela
Brown.
Show notes.
Angela Brown versus Hoffman, and you can find it on Case Law, Find Law. So she was waiting for her daughter at the airport, and her daughter was on a flight, and the flight got diverted, and they weren't giving Angela any information at all. So, like, you can imagine that's a very... You know, like, you're very nerve-wracking. Like, well, my daughter's supposed to be here on this flight, and the flight didn't come in. Where did it go? What time is it getting? Like, I need some information. And the parallels with Sandra Bland's case is just a little bit too harrowing. But, you know, she was upset. And just like with Sandra, like, oh, now you're being uppity. You're not acquiescing and being demure to white supremacy and authority. So now we're going to escort you out of the building. We're kicking you out of the airport. And whenever they do that, they have sort of legal ramifications and, you know, filed trespassings. And she's been dealing with it for many, many years. And it gets, like, much worse. Based on some evidence, it got overturned, and they were saying, okay, you can go to an appellate court. And the judge, like, specifically, like, made some – the way he worded it was like, you have to think of it in this way and not this other way. And then, like, basically handpicked a white jury. Like, it's bad. It's really bad. But
so it's going before the New York Supreme Court?
I believe so.
Okay.
I think it's any day. I think it might be like July something. It might got, and she keeps getting extended, and she's got a GoFundMe because, and maybe people don't even know it. She's probably, you know, defending herself. But even when you defend yourself, they make it, you know, such a white supremacist
system. Right.
You have to pay for every transcript, every report, every fucking page.
The hours.
It just adds up. Yeah. Even it's like, you know, you got to pay for, you know, like Xeroxing this or this. It's like $2 a fucking page, and the brief is 40-some-odd pages.
Right.
Like, the fuck, you know, like, that's just bullshit. So they're running her through all these, you know, very racist fucking hoops because a black woman deigned to, you know, stand her ground. And it touched me specifically because I've written about, and we have maybe talked about, we will when we have Ty on, the man that was with me at said airport. But I got fucking just, this is well over a decade ago, but embarrassingly shitty. Like, literally just like, it ended with me doing a slow clap, like, congratulations. Like, literally, that's like the level of like embarrassed, like, overly privileged white dude. And no one fucking arrested me. No one fucking accused me of being an angry white dude. Nobody fucking, you know, did shit for Shinola. They just were like, well, you know, whatever. You're clapping your hands looking like an asshole. Your bag's still ain't here. Fuck off.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, let's wish Angela luck yes. in her case. And obviously we want to support her. And we'll have the links for all that information on the show notes this week. We have one more.
Yeah. Three messages. Begging work, man. Woo-hoo.
Hey, good morning. Happy Saturday morning. It's at Coffee Light and Sweet from Twitter. I just listened to the latest podcast, and I heard the call. I got off my butt, and I'm calling the voice, the voice line, voicemail line. I love your show. One of the things that really cracked me up is I really love great music. I am a lover of old school music, and I love the shows where you do the countdown.
Oh, I love our music.
That one today.
From the 80s or the 90s. And I really love when your husband gets really excited about, is it coffee? No.
No, it's not. It's peaches and cream.
Uh-oh.
Bust it.
This one's for you, Coffee Light Sweet.
I'm cabbage patching in the fucking chair, motherfucker. Although he can't sing.
The S, the L, the I, the M. Let me tell you what I want to do. Let me show you that I feel you. Wanna freak, wanna ride with you. Wanna kiss, wanna put my lips all over you. Can't get enough of you.
I'm listening to that.
I think that Peaches and Cream is the only song that's been played more than our theme song. On the John, I think. Over
they're singing about, put my lips all over you. I can't think about it. I'm looking at this beer, and I'm thinking that same thing.
Are you?
Yeah, it's a really good beer.
Well, let's finish the voicemail.
Sorry. Coffee Light and Sweet. You got me excited.
It's some combo. I think it's Peaches and Cream.
It is.
I'm so excited, and that kills me because he loses it. He's like, turn it up.
You know, and the history with that song is why. That's been my shit for like...
So long.
Forever.
Like, I love that Peaches and Cream song. Like, really?
And I'm not even into good. like I'll be honest, like, of all the different, like, you know, categories and genres of music, like, I'd probably say that like black R&B is like not high on my list. Like, I listen to lots of music, and I have some catalog of black R&B, but not a lot. And but this one spoke to me. Peaches and Cream, I can't lie.
Absolutely. That tickles me so much. Love those music countdown shows. And shout out to the guest that gave out the tips for the men of every stripe and partners of every stripe for love tips and directed accordingly to various sites on the interweb.
She's talking about the clit work that Rashani talked about.
This is about Rashani. Shout out to Rashani.
Shout out to Rashani.
Dropping that knowledge.
He was talking all about the...
He was there.
Cunnilingus.
Yes, he was there.
We should have somebody on talking all about fellatio. We should be fair.
Okay, be fair.
Oh, my God. No, no, we should totally invite Good and Terrible.
Oh, yeah. We'll have Mal and C. John. Yeah, that'll be good.
And they can give blowjob tips, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Keep it fair.
For that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, love the show.
Wait a minute. I got to get that together.
Anywho, love the show. Love the show. Keep up the great work. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to the next podcast. Have a great day. Bye.
Thanks.
That reminded me of Lili from SWV, where she was like, I like Taja's white boy fetish. Because them white boys be cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did have that.
What did she say? I can't remember. It was really funny. Anyways.
I'll have it on my mind. I can pull it up. But that was Coffee Light and Sweet.
Yeah.
Thank you
all for your voicemails. And again, you can leave us a voicemail at 657-JOHNER, 657-JAWNERS. And we will play them on the show and have a great laugh, hopefully, because you'll say nice things about us.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. I like it. We actually have voicemails. Yeah. Keep it coming.
So... Dope Black Girls. Here we go. Hitting it. I got a whole thing, a list of Dope Black Girls from M4B.
And we do need to get some music for Dope Ass Black Girls.
Yeah, I haven't found the right one yet, so we may have to...
It's out there.
It's there. I don't know where, but I haven't found it yet.
Before you go into Dope Ass Black Girls...
Because I be feeling the white guys, too. Don't sleep.
Don't sleep.
That's on my mind. I'll put that in the notes too, dude. She does a little head nod like,
Don't sleep.
She like closes the one eye like,
I see you, Lily. So this week in Dope Black Girls, we have college students Crystal Valentine and Aliyah Jihad, who teamed up to recite their viscerally honest poem, To Be Black and Woman and Alive. They performed it at the 2015 College Union Poetry Slam Invitational, and they posted a video of them doing it on Button Poetry. Here we go.
I'm just saying, if she ain't got a booty, I ain't trying to hit it.
You know a nigga's biggest weakness is a white girl with a fat ass.
These black girls need to watch out, because white girls is winning.
Nah, like a foreign bitch, you know, that Spanish, that Latin type.
Nah, like that Asian type.
Yeah, like a Oriental mixed bitch.
Daddy from the Philippines, mama from Atlantic, mama from Africa.
Mama from sugarcane and segregation, from too much pride and not enough perm.
Mama from the gutter, from Section 8, from hood rat black belly. But she don't look like her mama, though.
I don't fuck with black girls. I know 4 brands of hydrocortisone by heart. I have a Pinterest board dedicated to lemon juice recipes for lightening skin.
No, too dark is the answer to a question I've given up asking.
Puerto Rican.
Italian.
Bayesian.
Thai.
I know they want me to be everything I'm not.
I need a girl who knows her place. I don't like that black power shit. That nappy Afro shit. That walk out your house like your mama ain't teach you how to look presentable shit. To be woman and black is to be born knowing your beauty does not belong to you.
Is to be the first and last person to love yourself.
Is to know you're not desirable to your own kind.
I grew up learning how to protect men who hate me.
Learned how to be the silencer to their pistol.
Learned how to be the revolution spit shining their spines. Behind every great man is the woman who taught him how to load the ammunition.
Behind every great man is the woman who pulled the trigger. Behind every great man is a chorus of voices buried beneath the gunfire.
I want an educated woman. I'm not talking book smart, I'm talking sheet smart.
A woman who understands the actual purpose of her mouth. In college, a boy said he didn't date black girls.
Like his mama wasn't a black girl.
Like his sister wasn't a black girl. Like he ain't drink milk and fat off a black nipple.
Like he wasn't birthed from a black womb.
Like a black woman's body ain't been for him.
Ain't spill herself to make room for him.
Like exiting a black woman's body ain't a blessing disguised as a shadow.
Like black ain't beautiful unless it's mixed.
To be woman and black is to be magic.
Is to be the witch that wouldn't burn.
It's to survive the white men with their needles and nooses.
And the black men with their hearts in their knuckles.
To be black and woman and alive is to be resilient. My very existence is defiance. But they want a good woman. A silk-skinned woman soft enough to break.
A woman whose vein is blue enough to get into the club. Who knows her way around the inside of a washing machine.
Who's the color of happily ever after. A woman who knows how to burn off her skin without screaming, without making a sound.
Mm. Wow, that was really good. So shout out to them. They eventually were part of a six-person team of poets representing NYU who eventually went on to win the competition.
Yeah,
so
shout out to you, Crystal and Aliyah.
That poem is amazing. We'll have a link to it on our show.
And I
want to
say I don't know which woman was on the far right of the stage. I think she was the same woman that did the when it was there was another piece we played on the show. I can't remember, but she's good. They're both great.
They're
terrific.
Both very good.
Obviously, they're champions now.
Yeah, champions. So I'm going to do a little personal movement for Black Lives Dope Black Girls shout out.
All
and
right.
I will start with my illustrious supervisor, one Tanya.
Dang for Tanya,
who without whom there would be no movement for Black Lives convening. She planned and executed the entire thing with just such grace and amazing not just work ethic, but I don't think people understand the ways in which you have to confront white supremacy to do that, this, to pull off this kind of event, this scale in this place, in the way that we did. And she faced it head on with like integrity and strength, and just would not take less than her people deserved, in any arena. And so I just salute her. She was just amazing. And next up is Tia, who handled all of the various families that joined us for the weekend, of those that we have lost, as Drew mentioned earlier in the opening ceremony, from Emmett Till through Mike Brown and everyone in between, and Kai Gurley's family. Eric Garner's family was there. Really, Mike Brown's father was there.
Jordan Davis.
Jordan Davis's Boyd. Dad was there. Rakia Boyd's brother Martinez was there. So it really was. Tamir Rice's mother was there. You know, I could go on and on about all of the families that were there. And it was really like, you know, I'll tip a quick hat to a dope black dude, which is a Merv, who was the director of that piece and just fucking nailed it. It was so good. But Tia was responsible for just making sure that the families had everything they needed, which, you know, it's a sensitive gathering for them. And she just really did it with such love and such grace. And I'm going to give a shout out to Mary as well. One of the just, when you talk about black love, I picture Mary. Like, it's strong but gentle. It's unbending but still soft to land on. Like, it's all of those things, and she just embodies that so much. A shout out to Beatrice as well, who spearheaded the housing piece and worked with me so closely to make sure that we were just finding all the rooms that we needed to find and getting people into the system and getting them set up with a place to sleep. Shout out to Elle, who, first of all, Elle's just gorgeous. But on top of that, the grace, the command of a room, the just presence. It's just, you know, it's something to behold. And then finally, I only leave Katrina to last because you had an interaction and you were like in awe about the whole interaction. And a shout out to Katrina, who was the lead at the registration desk Friday and Saturday. So she personally supervised everybody checking in on those 2 days, and cannot thank her enough
so
for that.
It goes to the sort of the space that is created with an affinity space and a, you know, a safe and comfort space, and just the frame that individuals there are in with regards to the sanctity of that space. And I'm talking to Leslie. She's my wife, you know. I'm talking about the stuff that, we're doing here and to what extent we're, you know, able to do this or that and so forth and so on. And at one point you'd said, and this is right as she walked up. So she doesn't hear any of our dialogue at all. She walks into frame almost immediately as you say, well, you guys should just leave. That's like the only thing that comes out of your mouth.
Right.
You
guys, but I said it very casually. Yeah, like, yeah, you guys should just leave.
You know, not like get out of here, but like just like, you know, you guys should just leave. You know, but like kind of like direct and like almost like dismissive. And if you were just hearing, that's all you heard. It was like, well, she just asked these people to leave, right? So my response is that I put my hand out on your wrist. I go to touch your hand. And I was like, you know, like talk to you. And as soon as I touched you, I mean, like the moment my hand was even moving towards you,
she flew to my side.
She came running right in, put her hand up. Whoa, 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 whoa! What are you doing?
Whoa, whoa, whoa!
And Leslie's like, "Oh my God, he's my husband."
Like, sorry.
I even said to her, I said, "I really respect that." You know, like I imagine how that must have looked. You know, like she just told me to leave, and I go to touch her.
Make sure, you know what's going on.
I thought the interaction was. I get a double ding. I thought that was the dopest ass black girl move I'd seen in a while. I thought it was really sweet.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously I saw many other amazing, shout out to Ashley Yee, shout out to Sherelle Brown, shout out to Kayla Ree, shout out to, I mean, just everybody who was there. Netta was there, and gosh, I can't think of anybody who wasn't. Alicia Garza was there, and Patrice and Opal, and just amazing people just were there, generally speaking. Brittany Pacchiati was there. I mean, really. And all of the wonderful women that make up this movement were there, and it was just great to all to see them all. But I had to give a shout out to this particular six crew who held me down, and just appreciate them so much.
That's awesome, and thank you for lifting those individuals up. I appreciate it. And unfortunately, every time we do Dope Ass Black Girls, we have to have the antithesis, I guess. The you know, Dope Ass Black Girls wouldn't be nearly as dope if there wasn't dumb ass white people.
Very true.
And this was a little bit different. It's a little personal to some degree. We usually have been a couple of idiot dumb ass men. But this one's a group. Should we name the group? I don't know if we should name the group. Maybe we should name
it. Why not? It's secret or whatever.
Is it a secret group?
I think so.
Well, don't name it then. It doesn't matter. So there was a group that Leslie and I were both a part of on Facebook. And I got to be honest. I've seen now in the last 12 months, and maybe this is new to me, like, you know, movement space and organizations and group dynamics. But I've seen a lot of groups just fucking implode for a lot of reasons. And there's usually some specifics to each group that implodes, and it's usually an individual, you know, taking a little bit more control and direction over what the group should be, and frequently it's a white person. And so the group that Leslie and I are part of, it started as a group where black and white individuals are going to get together and really just talk about, like, you know, in short sort of form, almost like helpful tips on how to not do microaggressions, like, you know, like literally. And it started with black people indicating in a very clear and safe space, these are the kind of microaggressions we face, and here's how they're phrased, and this is what you shouldn't do and why you shouldn't do it. Like, we're creating like a resource, like, hey, you know, all of a sudden there's gonna be a list of things that, like, you know, white people don't fucking do this stupid shit, you idiots.
Right. Like, and it was gonna be like, there would be maybe have a Twitter storm, like when we first started talking.
Yeah, there was a lot of
it was supposed to be like, yeah, we would make it like really raw, but then like you white people would make it like palatable for white people and like actually put it into more like, I don't know, like language that white people could understand. So we were more like, black people that were participating were more, like you said, it was a safe space to just be like, oh, this fucking thing happened. Like, that's the worst.
And we were going to take that information and be like, oh, thank goodness, you know, so-and-so told us about this, and now we know never to fucking make this kind of mistake again. Like, it was going to be a utility, you know, like a you know, glossary of like, don't fucking do this stupid shit. So we created that, a bunch of us, Leslie included, other, you know, women, other black women I know. And at some point, and just
so
like
let's
a lot,
stop there, because we created it, and then the thing that we were supposed to do, which was like this Twitter storm or something, never ended up happening. So it just has been living on as like people coming in and just posting either things that were related to
microaggressions,
or people actually, you know, people of color sharing microaggressions they experience. So,
but in fairness, I hadn't been to the page in months.
I've been there. I get the notifications.
Okay, so I turn those off.
So, but I hadn't noticed anything like too like weird. But I don't go there as much as I had been when we were actively doing it. So, Imani, angry black lady, right? I think
that's correct.
Yeah, on Twitter from. Twib, This Week in Blackness, had posted that she had gotten invited to this group, and that the
first of all, just straight off there, you don't just randomly invite people.
Especially not people that are like, you know, journalists or personal, you know, I don't know. Like, that's just extra weird.
Take it even a step further. Like, I'm not saying that, like, she is an angry black lady, but, like, if you were going to invite somebody, like, that's not the person. Come on. That's just stupid.
It's just dumb.
That's just dumb. That's a like, you know, this thing of, like, don't do this. Don't fucking do that. Like, don't invite people unannounced.
It makes me feel like the person, there's somebody in that group that's, like, a fucking bona fide racist.
Maybe.
Like, they were like, oh, you're angry, huh? Oh, like, because I can imagine the things that Imani, she's very, like, upfront about the bullshit that white people do. And I could be like, oh, let her go look in this group. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
it just seems
maybe,
very, like,
maybe
off. And I was like, huh, that's weird. And I said to her, well, you know, I had been a part of that group. And she said that the first thing she saw was a white person asking if it's okay to ask, what are you to a person of color?
Right. So just to be totally clear, a space that was there for black people and white people to talk about specifically microaggressions that black people face, a safe space for black people to list these microaggressions, has now turned into a place where black people get invited to read fucking microaggressions. The fuck? Like, seriously. Like, how'd that happen? That's crazy. That's like a complete 180 from the group's purpose. Like, well, we're going to help people not make these microaggressions, or we're going to create a space like every other fucking space, like every space known to man, where people commit fucking microaggressions. Like, that's just not a – you don't need that learning space. There's a bajillion of those spaces. Not needed.
Right. Absolutely. So I like was pissed off, A, that she had been invited unasked, unprompted, and B, that this was even allowed in there. So I like,
it was worse. You defended the group.
I did.
Initially, you're like, Amani, I was part of it. That's what it was for. Absolutely.
And she said to me, oh, if it was doing that, I could see that actually being useful. And I was like, yeah.
Kudos to the idea that the group originally had.
It could be useful, you know? And so I went into the group and sure enough saw this post and I was like, just question the admin. I was like, dude, what the fuck is this? This is some like not safe for black people shit if I ever saw it. What's going on here? And it was like, well, the group evolved and now we let white people come in here and just say the things that they're uncomfortable saying out in public or, you know, on the main part of the internet. And that's what it's evolved to. And I go, well, have you changed your about information? Have you changed the mission statement of the group? Because what you just said is some bullshit and black people need to know that this is not a safe place for them to share their ideas, talk about the things that are important to them. And certainly they're going to be triggered by fucking bullshit ass white people in here. And I'll be leaving the group if that's the way that it is. And it was like, oh, you can leave.
No, it was worse. It was like, well, this is what's happened naturally. This is just
naturally
how it's
gone. Naturally is the some bullshit. You created a group. There's nothing natural about it changing to the exact antithesis of what the group is meant
for. Complete 180.
That's not fucking
complete
natural. 180. There ain't shit that's natural about that, bitch. Thank you.
Yeah, it's awful. It's completely awful. And it the historical antecedents of work, information, content, spaces for created by in partnership with black women in particular that now are run for and in the prominence and domain of white people. You know, just like it's like appropriation on the grossest scale.
Yep.
And it was worse than appropriation. Like you could just appropriate and be like, nope, I'm in charge now. It's like, nope, I'm gonna charge now to make it this steaming pile of fucking dung that's everywhere. Like, seriously, what black person would ever fucking set foot in a space that allows white people to just, like, spew microaggressions and bullshit? Like, why would I ever want a black person I care about anywhere near that space? Like, seriously, like, just honest to God, like, I just don't get it. I don't get it, much less invite. Like, hey, Imani, come join this group. Like, just, what the hell? That's just it's just completely asinine. I'm not a part of it. I'm certainly as surprised as you are. You called me and you're like, "Am I?"
I was like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" You,
you're like, "Am I? Do my? You tell me. How do you remember? Am I misremembering?" I'm like, "And I said exactly what you said." You're like, "Oh, nope, okay,
good.
This
is fucking bullshit."
Yeah, you know what? We need a
power cleanse. You know it's not bullshit though.
Yeah, we need.
Okay.
I'm gonna run it again.
Okay.
I play it again because it's just too good. I'm just gonna let him do the talking. Here we go.
As you well know, there are four Americans in Iran, three held on trumped up charges according to your administration, one whereabouts unknown. Can you tell the country, sir, why you are content with all the fanfare around this deal to leave the conscience of this nation and the strength of this nation unaccounted for in relation to these four Americans? And last week, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said under no circumstances should there be any relief for Iran in terms of ballistic missiles or conventional weapons. It is perceived that that was a last-minute capitulation in these negotiations. Many in the Pentagon feel you've left the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff hung out to dry. Could you comment?
I got to give you credit, Major, for how you craft those questions. For the notion that I'm content as I celebrate with American citizens languishing in Iranian jails, Major, that's nonsense, and you should know better.
Pause it.
I've met with.
You know, he was really like, I wish a motherfucker would right then. He was like, really, dude?
You could have took it harder.
Yeah, he looked like he was, I mean, I swear, I would not be surprised if he just goes fucking real, like, the last, like, month or so, he's just like, fuck y'all, for real. Like, he's so close. He gets so, This one is bad because he's really like holding his tongue.
He is on the edge.
He's like really trying to be like, how can I say this? Well, I'm not trying to fucking come at this dude because for real, this is some bullshit. Go ahead.
The families of some of those folks. Nobody's content. And our diplomats and our teams are working diligently to try to get them out.
It's a nonsense question, Obama.
Nonsense.
He's just not giving a fuck.
He does not give any.
I hope that the executive clemency pen gets bigger and faster. Right, his single handed attempt at righting wrongs with the criminal justice system. I fucking love it. I hope he does like a ton more shit.
Me too.
So who was it? Was it Angela that?
No, it was Coffee Light Sweet. So okay. So Coffee Light Sweet, you're in luck. We're gonna do a playlist to run through right now. We're gonna do 13 songs that are perfect for your carefree Black Girl Summer playlist. This is by LG Parker from the Black Youth Project. Shout out to BYP 100 who are out in full force from so many of their chapters from New York to the Bay at Movement for Black Lives. I think I have their...
how many songs? 13? What's the over-under on how many I know?
I don't know.
Four?
Maybe.
Maybe four? Four and a half is the over-under? Yeah. I'd take. I think if I did four and a half, I don't think I'd take the over.
You don't think you would take me over?
I'd bet on myself to know less than four.
Yeah.
Four or less.
Yeah, so BYP was handing out these... They had these great banners and stuff. And they were handing out stickers that said unapologetically black. And it was awesome to just have that all feeling all around.
I like the... I don't know the organization, but I've seen their representatives a lot of places. March of Justice.
Oh, yeah. BYP is big. Yeah, yeah. They're amazing. But they do have an age limit, so you age out of it. So
okay.
But good for them. So the first song is Nicki Minaj, Feeling Myself, featuring Beyoncé.
One. I know one. I know one.
Oh, you know that one?
Oh, come on. Who doesn't know Nicki Minaj? I'm feeling myself. I'm feeling myself.
Yo, B. They ready. Let's go. Feeling myself. I'm feeling myself. I'm feeling my. Feeling myself. I'm feeling myself. I'm feeling my. Feeling my. Feeling myself. I'm feeling myself. I'm feeling my. Feeling myself. I'm feeling myself. I'm feeling my. I'm with some hood girls looking back at it, and a good girl in my tax bracket. Got a black card and less tax have it. These Chanel bags is a bad habit. I do balls, Dale Mavericks. My Maybach, black matted. Bitch never left, but I'm back at it, and I'm feeling myself, Jack Rabbit. Feeling myself, back off, cause I'm feeling myself, Jack off. He be thinking about me when he wax off. Wax on?
Wax on.
That national anthem hats off. Then I curve that nigga like a bad horse. Let me get a number two with some Mac sauce. Or on a run tour with my mask off.
I'm feeling myself. I'm feeling myself. I'm feeling myself. I'm feeling myself. I'm feeling myself.
All right. Number two is D'Angelo. Everybody Loves the Sunshine.
I know D'Angelo. I don't know if I know this song.
It's from his new album, Voodoo. You probably won't know.
I don't know. Is he the one that's always naked, or is that Maxwell?
You don't know, that's him. Listen to me. Oh, no, no.
Oh, that's him. No, yeah, no. Oh, yeah.
That's him. Oh. Yeah, oh, yeah, that's him.
Oh, that's him. I didn't know that song, but I knew that he's naked all the fucking time.
Oh, that's him.
Oh, that's him on
Number three.
I caught you creeping.
Is Kendrick Lamar's Dirty Mackin' with D'Angelo.
This has a new album, too. I know this.
Blow My High, so. Kendrick.
All my car got leather and wood. In my hood, we call it book. Everybody wanna bow. I let brows at the mall. If he up, watching fouls. I can fuck with y'all.
Number
Kendrick ran many bars.
That's okay.
What's that about?
There's more Kendrick later in the,
Pimp Your Butterfly right up in this bitch right now.
Yeah, but there's more Kendrick coming, so we gotta keep it moving here.
Okay, all right.
Number four is Lion Babe featuring Childish Gambino, Jump High.
See, I don't know any. I know of him. I prefer his work on.
Before him as an actor.
What was the TV show?
Community.
Yeah, I prefer his comedian. Community versus rapping. Jump so high. Tie me down.
This song is so dope.
Where's Gambino?
He's featuring.
Oh, I see.
Like that song.
So I've got two that I know so far.
So the Beyonce Flawless remix featuring Nicki Minaj.
That's three. That'll be over now for sure. How do you not know Beyonce?
Feminist. A person who believes in the social, political, and economic.
Shout out to
Chimamanda.
Chimamanda, thank you. Adichie.
Adichie.
Chimamanda speaks on Twitter.
Americana. I love Beyonce. She's so damn good.
Flawless.
Number six, One Fetty Wap, which I would probably say this may be the song of the summer.
Yeah, you played it last. Didn't you play it on our podcast?
A couple times ago. We were talking about some good music.
So I don't want to say I know this, but you played it for me, so now I do.
Shit is so fucking good.
You stand hard for Fetty Wap. I haven't seen that in a while.
I love Fetty Wap.
You do like fucking just southern fucking like trap and shit, dude. That's your shit.
That is my shit.
Minus Miami.
I'm like, hey, what's up, hello? Since you're pretty as soon as you came in the door. I just wanna chill, got a sack for us to roll. Married to the money, introduced her to my stove. Showed her how to whip it, now she remixing for low. She my track queen, let her hit the bando. We be counting up, watch how far them bands go. We just set a goal, talking matching Lambos. A 56 a gram, 500 grams, though. Man, I swear I love it, how she worked the damn pole. Hit the strip club, we be letting bands go. Everybody hating, we just call them fans, though. In love with the money, I ain't never letting go. And now you're high with my baby, baby. I just left the mall, I'm getting fly with my baby guy. And I get ride with my baby, baby. I'll be in the kitchen cooking pies with my baby guy.
Yeah, I love that song. You know what it is I think about trap music in me is like I feel there's like a little dance hall-ish nature to it. And all of that southern rap is like that. Like the beat is like almost like a Caribbean type of thing. And so that's why I feel it so very much. Number seven coming in. Number seven on the list is Kendrick Lamar once again, which is why I didn't play the other one that much, which is I love this song too. Kendrick is so good.
But I know God, Satan wanna put me in a bow tie. Pray that the holy water don't go dry, yeah, yeah. As I look around me, so many motherfuckers wanna tell me. But the enemy gon' never drown me. In front of a dirty double mirror, they tell me. And I love myself. The world is a ghetto, only guns and thinking I love myself. Let the paranoia haunt you. Peace to fashion police. I wear my heart on my sleeve. Let the runway start. You know the miserable do love company. What do you want from me and my scars? Everybody lack confidence. Everybody lack confidence. How many times my potential was anonymous? How many times the city making me promises? So I promise this. I love myself. The world is a ghetto. Guns are making nice. I love myself. But they can do what they want when they want. I don't mind. I love myself.
Yeah, I love
you. So, you know, when that album dropped, I was up for work upstate. And, you know, Matt, he fucking shit. I really wouldn't listen to the album at all that instantly. But Matt was like, dude, you're going to listen to this. You're going to listen to this.
So good.
And it was one of those albums where I think I felt the same way about Justin Timberlake's debut album. What was that one? I can't remember. But you could just hear, like, okay, that's the first signal. In the same way, like, oh, nope, he's going to drop that. That's a single.
Yeah, everything. On. That is a single.
I know. It was like the lead single. I'm just saying, you could like hear the album, like, nope, that's going to be the, you know.
Yeah, he's so good. I love him anyways.
Yeah, but Matt fucking about shit himself. He played it like seven times that day at work.
A lot of Beyonce, but Beyonce comes in again with 7-Eleven. Oh, this video is so good. Anyways, coming in next, we've got The Internet with Don't Ya.
See, I don't know if I could say I know that song, 7-Eleven. I mean, I know Beyonce, but I knew that song. I definitely don't know this song.
I thought you did know this song, but maybe I'm wrong.
The Internet? I'm not sure I ever know anything about The Internet.
I like it. That's a good song.
She's got a beautiful timbre. Are you feeling dope, Leslie?
Yes,
summer.
Super dope.
Just getting in the mood.
Carefree.
Dope and carefree.
That's a good one. It's the Internet. Coming in next, we've got Leanne LaHavas, who I fucking love, with Unstoppable.
I don't recognize that either.
Really? She played in Philly. We didn't get to go, though. We didn't get tickets in time.
I
at World Cafe Live.
She reminds me of somebody. I don't know if it's like Estelle.
She reminds me of Corinne Bailey Ray a little bit.
Okay.
Like a little bit.
There's
a little something. I think she's British also. So, or she's from Europe. She's not American.
Corinne's the shit, though.
Yeah, don't talk about Corinne, please. Excuse me. Number 12 is Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment with Sunday Candy Short Film. I haven't heard this song before.
I've never heard of this group or any song.
Me neither. I'm interested, though. It's a good list so far.
She can say in her voice, in her way, that she loves me. With her eyes, with her smile, with her belt, with her hands, with her money. I am the thesis of her prayers. Her nieces and her nephews are just pieces of the layers. Only one she loves as much as me is Jesus Christ and Taylor. I got a future song singing for my grandma. You sing it too, but your grandma ain't my grandma. Mine's handmade, pan fried, sun dried, south side. And beat the devil by a landslide. Praying with a hands tied. President of my fan club, Santa. Something told me I should bring my.
You gotta move it slowly. They can eat my body like it's holy. I've been waiting for you for the whole week. I've been praying for you, you're my Sunday kid.
You gotta move slowly. Candy, your peppermint is the truth. I'm pessimistic on Monday if I had tweaked and missed you. You look so good with the hat on, had to match with the shoes. Came and dressed in the satin, I came and sat in your pew. I come to Christmas for dinner.
This video is amazing.
Hello, holes in my stocking, holding your pockets in place. I like my love with the budget.
He's from Chi-Town.
Is that right?
Donnie like Trumpet.
I like him.
Electricity rent. You sound like why the gospel choir got so tired. Seeing his praise on a daily basis, so I gotta try it. You my dream. Catch a dream team, captain. Matter of fact, I ain't seen you in a minute. Let me take my butt to charge.
You better come on in.
Come on in this house.
It's kind of like freak
like
folky.
It. It's
and
really good.
It's kind of interesting.
I
dig
love it.
It.
Oh, man. I'll have to see if we can see them live. Very cool. And then number 13 is actually a song I've just, I've heard it before. It's Janelle Monáe and Jidenna with a Yoga.
Your booty do that yoga.
Party at the beach down in Copacabana. Sipping Gila Fish. Got my black yoga pants on. Me and Brittany, we've been down in Atlanta. Sweating in the club. Call me Dirty Diana. Flexing like a yogi. Drop it down with your hands up. Do a headstand. Bend it back. Put your legs up. I ain't got no worries. I'm my own private dancer.
Dancer.
My own private dancer.
off my areola. All right.
Nice.
So 13 songs that are perfect for your carefree Black girl summer. So thanks. Shout out to BYP for that. LG Parker compiled the list, and I'll have a link to the show notes. So check that out.
This is the other song from the Trumpet, the most second popular on Spotify. The Candy song is much more popular.
I don't want to be you. I just want to be me.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to be cool. I just want to be me.
Be me.
You don't want to be cool.
Be cool.
So you just want to be me.
Be.
I don't want to be cool. I don't want to be cool. I don't want to be cool. I don't want to be cool.
Yeah, I might give it a more listen.
Yeah, we'll check it out. I think that's it. We didn't have any TV this week because we weren't here.
Yeah, I didn't watch anything. I watched some shit, but you weren't here. So
yeah, we can't talk about that. But we do have coming up this week. We're doing a second episode with the interracial John associate producer and original Jarner.
The OJ.
Carl. He doesn't like that.
The OJ. Original Jarner.
The original, the O'Jarner.
The O'Jarner.
Yeah,
I like that. The O'Jarner.
The O'Jarner, yo.
The O'Jarner. There's only one. There's only one. There'll never be an O'Jarner.
Nope.
Just him.
Just him. So Carl will be with us, and we're looking forward to catching up with him and also going through lots of cool stuff he's found to talk about.
For real, we got a Carl-centric show.
Yeah.
Associate producer's content.
Saw him.
Right. And I'm not trying to like put him on blast. It was like almost like I was like, oh my god, that's like awesome. He's like, hey guys, you think like maybe you're gonna record next week? Like maybe I can come on the show. I'm like, oh my god, of course, Carl, we love
you. No, he's coming on every once a month. So.
I know. He was just prompting us because we hadn't had him on this month.
Right.
He's moving shit.
Yeah.
But I love it. That's the associate producer's job.
Yes, he's got to keep our shit together.
Ring that bell, dude.
Shout out to you, Carl. All right. Again, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. And you can find me on Twitter at Leslie Mack, M-A-C. And you can find that dude at A Very White Guy. And that's it.
Is that it? That's it? All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
High five.